2 Samuel 6. So we looked at David being anointed as the king, right? That's where we stopped. He was anointed king, made Jerusalem the capital of Israel. And he has this idea that this being, what is significant about that place? Why would David want to put a temple there or to bring the ark there to Jerusalem? Because it was holy, okay? What had happened on Mount Moriah? Okay, on Mount Moriah, that is the place that Abraham went to offer Isaac. Now, we haven't gotten quite that far yet in this because at this point, David's just saying, let's bring it to the town. But we know that ultimately there will be on Mount Moriah, there will be a temple built. And in that temple will be the Ark of the Covenant. So at this point, he just wants to bring it home. Remember, it was taken under Saul's reign, or during his reign. And it arrived at a place. And what happened to those people? Well, before that, right? Those people opened it up and got disease, right? God struck them. And so they said, get that thing out of here. And so they put it on a cart and sent it away. And it's been now at Kirjath-Jearim. And that's, or at this point, David wants to go gather it. And he says in verse 6, chapter 6, again, David gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. David rose and went with all the people that were with him from Baal of Judah to bring up thence the ark of God, whose name is called by the name of the Lord of hosts that dwelleth between the cherubims. They set the ark of God upon a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab that was in Gibeah, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drave the cart. They brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was at Gibeah, accompanying the ark of God, and Ahio went before the ark. So, how is the ark of God to be moved? Not on a cart? Supposed to have the staffs through the holes and carry it. What's that? By Levites, okay? So, why put it on a cart? Convenience. Didn't ask. Didn't look up the rules. There you go, working smarter, not harder. And the reality is that sometimes we take shortcuts, improve conveniences, and we wouldn't do it our way. We wouldn't necessarily think that would be how is that a bad thing? But God said, do it this way. And considering that new, by the way, it was a new cart. Can you imagine? Hey, I want you to build, if we got a team together here, we said, I want you to build a cart, and I want it to, we're going to put the Ark of the Covenant on it and move it from here to Jerusalem. I imagine we would have the best design, craftsmanship, finish that anyone could think possible. This is going to be the Ark cart. And I imagine, and it doesn't say, it says it was new, but it doesn't say, what kind it was. I imagine we would put our very best effort into it. But God said the way it should be moved is men carrying it. That's it. He had rules. And so to put it on a cart, while it doesn't sound like a bad thing, it wasn't the way it was designed to be carried. And in our lives, there are things that while we don't see anything necessarily wrong, right? The Bible doesn't actually say you can't. Does the Bible anywhere say you can't put it on a cart? Well, it says men ought to carry it. Yeah, but it didn't say you couldn't put it on a cart. And we do that sometimes, don't we? But the Bible doesn't say you can't. It says do it this way, but it doesn't say you can't do it that way. It's not exclusive. And so we justify ourselves. We justify our actions, our sins. And they put it on the cart, and they made a big deal. This was a big deal. This Ark of the Covenant that was given the instructions from God to Moses and then fashioned and formed and developed and used for all of these years, where God would come and meet with the high priest. It was a very sacred, a very holy thing. And a treasure. You know, if there was anything on earth that represented God, it would be that. In fact, part of the problem is they used it as a token, didn't they? They begin to think that the power of God rested in this box. Well, you can't put God in a box. The power of God is not a material thing that we can carry. You know, people say, well, I carry this cross in my pocket because, and I heard somebody say this just yesterday, it brings me good luck. I assure you that a cross, a rabbit's foot, a penny, right, a trinket does not bring you good luck. It might give you more confidence. It might keep you from losing your confidence because you have that thing to hold on to and remind you, hey, I've got faith. But it's not that object that brings you blessings. And it had become an object of worship. And it shouldn't be. But if there was anything that represented God, it would be that box. And so they wanted to make a big deal out of it. They got a new cart. I'm sure it was well designed. They put the Ark of God on it. And verse 5 says, David and all the house of Israel played before the Lord on all manner of instruments made of fir wood, even on harps, psalteries, timbrels, cornets, cymbals. I mean, they were celebrating. They were jubilant. They were excited. In verse 6, they came to Nacon's threshing floor. Uzzah put forth his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen shook it. So they hit a bump, if you will, and it rattled. Which is why God said, don't put it on a cart. Can you imagine what might have happened? How heartbreaking it would have been for this treasure of historic value and spiritual significance to fall off that new cart and break? Can you imagine what would have happened? And so Uzzah couldn't let that happen, could he? And he reached back there and he put his hand on just to hold it. How many of us do that with our kids, right? Grandkids or whatever. Just hold it in place. Or if you've ever delivered flowers or maybe what you brought to the meal yesterday had a loose lid on it. You hold it so you dry. And that's what Uzzah did. Verse 7, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah. God smote him there for his error, and there he died by the ark of God. Who was God mad at? It says he's mad at Uzzah. Right? He's mad at Uzzah. Uzzah touched. He did not have the right. Why was Saul removed as king? And David took his place. Because he took on the role of the prophet, of the priest. He took upon himself what was not his to do. In fact, he usurped, not only did he usurp his authority, but he lied And he stole and he disobeyed. And God said, I'm done. And of course, it broke Samuel's heart, but God said, I'm done with Saul. I can't use him anymore. I won't use him anymore. I'm done. And so now David, as king, is trying to bring the Ark of God back. And Uzzah, in the process, violates the rule. Violates God's law, touches it. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against him. Look at verse 8. And David was displeased. Now who's mad at God? Why? Because he didn't read the rules. Look, whose fault was the whole thing? Ultimately, David's. If David had said, hey, I've got a great idea. I want to bring the Ark of God to Jerusalem. I want to build a nice tabernacle for it, a new one, and put it in there. And I think that's the great thing to do. And so what do you think we should do? And somebody read the scripture and say, well, it says, bring the staves and carry it by Levites. Well, that'll be fine. Let's do it. But instead, they said, we can take it up a notch. We can do it better. I know this was God's plan, but I can do it better and do it more conveniently. Would it have been any faster to put it on a cart than to walk it there? No, you've got a parade of people in front of it anyway. So the priest could only go as fast as the parade in front of them. It would not have been a problem at all, but they just thought they could do it different. Do it better. And that's the problem with Christians today. We think we can improve what God has laid out. We can't improve it. We can't make salvation any better. We can't make heaven any better. We can't make the Bible any better. The Bible is the Bible. We can't fit it to satisfy everybody. We've got to leave it alone. Read it as it is. Use it as it is. David got mad at God. He was displeased with God because the Lord had made a breach upon Uzzah. And he called the name of the place Perez Uzzah. What does Perez Uzzah mean? Okay, now look, the Bible, it explains itself when it throws these words out there that we have no idea what they mean. It gives us the definition right there. Perez means what? Breach. And what does Uzzah mean? Uzzah. That's a name. And so it's called Perez Uzzah, just a breach to Uzzah. They want to remember this place is where Uzzah was breached. David was afraid of the Lord that day and said, how shall the ark of the Lord come to me? So he was displeased. He was afraid. And he had to take a step back and say, what did I do? Right? Because I'm responsible. It was my idea. No matter what we did beyond that, it was my idea, and I'm responsible. The buck stops here. I'm the king. And so if it goes wrong, I have to take the responsibility for that, the accountability. And he doesn't understand. Verse 10, David would not remove the ark of the Lord to the city of David, but David carried it aside into the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord continued in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. So the answer was, it went to that house, and what happened? Well, they were blessed. They were blessed. God blessed them for giving sanctuary to the ark and for not being so curious that they opened it up and looked inside. Because remember, that's what got the other people in trouble. They looked inside. It was told King David, saying, the Lord has blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that pertaineth unto him because of the ark of God. How long was it there? 3 months. How long had it been since they had tried to get it before that? 20 years. 20 years it stayed there, and they, you know, nobody thought it was important enough to go get it. And now it's there, and 3 months go by, and like there's no plan. There's no urgency. Verse 12, David went up and brought the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with gladness. Why? Because he wanted those blessings, right? And Obed-Edom, the significant thing for us to understand, those are Gentiles. They're not even Jews. And this Ark of the Covenant being there was not really significant to them, to their faith. But to have it in Israel, to have it among God's people was significant. It was important. Verse 13, it was so when they that bear the ark of the Lord had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed oxen and fatlings. Can you imagine getting all those people saying, let's go get it? And everybody gets it. They take 6 steps. He says, okay, stop. Let's celebrate. And that's what they did. They celebrated. They had the idea that they had gone this distance doing it the right way. Doing it the right way. Now it was going to be successful. Verse 14, David danced before the Lord with all his might. David was girded with a linen ephod. David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. I mean, they were excited. They were celebrating. This was a big deal. This was that one thing of all the things of Israel that you could think of, this was that one thing that most represented God. And here we are today. Where's the Ark of the Covenant? There's a group in Ethiopia that says they got it. They say it's housed in the basement of a church there, and security fencing all around it. And they say, we got it. And you go there and say, let us see it. They say, oh, you can't see it. I guarantee you, if they had it, we'd be able to see it somehow, whether by camera or whatever. Now, those who say it was hidden and those who say it was destroyed. The answer is we don't know. We don't have, but again, it is a material object. God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Right, we don't worship a box. We don't worship a cross. Verse 16, the ark of the Lord came to the city of David. Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord. And she despised him in her heart. Why? Jealousy? Because he was barely dressed, barely covered? What's that? Okay, because she was still upset that her father was killed and no longer king. She thought he looked ridiculous or silly. Jealousy. Could it be? Okay, maybe she thought he was in it for the wrong reasons. Could it be that she had no interest in spiritual things and no concern about this ark of this God? Remember that Saul wanted David to marry his daughter for one reason, because she was hard to live with. And he thought, if I can ruin this guy anyway, I can ruin him by her. Yeah. And so she was trouble. Could it be that she saw all this excitement, all this enthusiasm, and her jealousy and her envy, or for whatever reason, she saw no point? This is the wife of the king. Wouldn't you think if she was spiritual that she would have gone to? Or that she would have at least been standing at the window celebrating with him and excited for him and excited for her nation and excited for God? She had no interest, so she found a reason to humiliate and criticize him because it didn't matter to her. She thought it was foolish. She thought he looked silly. Anybody ever do anything silly? I see these guys that put their, you know, the glitter guys, is that what they call them? They're garnet, and one's garnet, one's gold. None of y'all ever did that? Orange and blue? I mean, nobody ever did that? Right? So we look at it, but do we criticize them and say, oh, they're being ridiculous? No, we think that's cool. Why not? We're celebrating with them. But because it's something we can share an interest in, we don't criticize them. We say, oh, that's foolish. Now, if somebody couldn't connect with that or couldn't relate to what they were celebrating, they would say, well, that's foolish. And that's what McCall was doing. She was criticizing David because she didn't care about the Ark of God. That's what it was about. She didn't care. So what should she have done if she wanted some? She should have gone to the party. Should have gone to the parade. You know, we defeat ourselves because we don't participate. Oh, those guys that are out there worshiping, they think they're big shots. I mean, there's room in the choir for you too. There's no reason to criticize other people when you're just standing on the sidelines not participating. But people do that all the time. In business, in church, and in life. I can't believe somebody would jump out of an airplane. It wasn't about her. Yeah. Center of attention. But she could have been there celebrating, thinking beyond herself, outside of herself. And she despised him in her heart, she says, the Bible says. Verse 17, they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in its place in the midst of the tabernacle that David had pitched for it. David offered burnt offerings, peace offerings before the Lord. And as soon as David made an end of the offering, of offering burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. He, the king, with the priestly garment, blesses the people. And the Jews get it that our words matter, that there is value in what we say. When McCall says that to David, oh, you look like an idiot out there, like a fool, dancing in front of all those young women out there. I mean, if you studied, you see all the different things that she said. Uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaids. She's just looking for a reason to criticize. So she's finding every angle to say it's wrong. But he's blessing the people because he understands words matter. Well, her words matter too. The little things that we say, anybody ever say something just brief and maybe terse? Or you really weren't trying to hurt somebody. You were just trying to be funny. But it hurt them. I know I've done that. Again, I wasn't trying to hurt them, just trying to be funny. And they didn't think it was funny. And he blessed the people. He said words. You know, blessed be Israel. We don't have it written out here. Blessed be Israel. The Lord bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you, right? Common blessing. Words, they matter. Verse 19, he dealt among all the people, even the whole multitude, as well to the women as men, to everyone a cake of bread, a good piece of flesh, a flagon of wine. So all the people departed, everyone to his house. Everybody got a take home. And David returned to bless his house. How about that? He's blessed the nation. Now he's coming home to bless his house. To do what? To say words. To do what? To show favor. And he gets there and he's greeted with joy and pleasantry, right? This is something we really got to practice. When we come home or when our spouse comes home from a hard day or whoever it is comes home, the first thing out of our mouth should not be all the problems. How about some just, how was your day? It's good to see you. We can hold the problems are not going to change in the next 30 minutes. Give them a chance to get in and rest. Bless them. Smile. Be happy. And then later drop the bomb, right? But let them get in the door for a second. There was a lady in the church I pastored, and I was talking about something like this, probably not the same text. And she said, Pastor, I stop at the park for half an hour before I go home because she says, I've got to get my peace. And I know when I get there, I'm not going to get any. That's tragic. That's sad. David returned to bless his house, and Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, can you use the sarcastic voice that she's got? How glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaids of his servant as one of the vain fellows shamelessly uncovereth himself. How glorious was the king today? Right? Selfishness. No. She was, as they say, a pill. And that's why Saul got them together. Because she was so difficult. Thorn in the flesh. Man, she'll drive him crazy. Here, have my daughter as a wife. And now her sarcasm. Verse 21, David said, it was before the Lord. He says, guess what? It wasn't for you. So it doesn't matter if you like it. The Lord which chose me before thy father. Ooh. A little knife twisting there. And before all his house to appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore will I play before the Lord. Quite a relationship they had, isn't it? Verse 22, I will yet be more vile than thus, and will be base in mine own sight, and of the maidservants which thou hast spoken of. Of them shall I be had in honor. I tell you what, I get better attention out there than I do here. Go ahead. There you go. God said we can't have that up here. But I mean, look at this. This is not a marriage counseling plan going on right here, is it? But he's digging back. Guys, their relationship is like this right here. It's terrible. But he says, you know, but at least I get attention out there. At least somebody likes me outside of the house. Come here, and what do I hear? Man, 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 man. Therefore, I'm going to call this daughter of Saul had no child to the day of her death. So what is the significance of this chapter? Besides what, how not to have a marriage, right? But the point is that David wanted to do something that was good. It was not about the blessing. It was about, this is the ark of God. It belongs here. This is the right place for it. But in their effort to do something big, they overstepped. And there's nothing wrong with going big, and there's nothing wrong with doing new things. But we have to do things God's way, or it's going to fail. And it's going to cause trouble. Work smarter. Mm-hmm. Take the easy way. We'll do what God expects as long as it's convenient. We'll do what God expects as long as it's easy. And we'll use the lightest excuse to quit or not start. If it doesn't work our way, we don't want to do it. And that's right. Anything else? Let's take a break.